Welcome, everyone, to tonight's version of the Road to Recovery. I'm your host, Dan Chuba, coming to you, I think, a little bit late. I apologize if I am late, but I'm glad you're here and joining me. I will be with you from now until 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. And guess what? Tonight we have a special guest. Tonight's special guest is Arna from California, talking about what it's like to be a parent of someone, from California, a parent of heroin, okay, parent, special guest from CA, what was it, California, California, well, I don't know if that'll be, well, whatever. Our guest, special guest tonight, guest from California, is Arna, and she's going to be talking about what it's like to have a son that is addicted to heroin and the success she had of getting him off that, a parent of a heroin addict. So if you're listening and you want to, please, I'm glad you are. Oops, it's 44. I don't know if we're going to get it all out here, but let's send it out anyway, and it's too much text. Let's see. Listen. I'm broadcasting live. There we go. Right. Listen in now at, there you go. And I'm sure that's it. An hour. Okay. You are listening to The Road to Recovery. We come to you live every week to talk to you about what it's like to be out there in the public acknowledging and letting people know that it's okay to be in recovery, okay? People that are in recovery sometimes feel shameful, shame that they are broken, that there's something wrong with us. And I have been, guess what, today being, let's see, August 31st means what, folks? You're listening, those of you who listen often. This represents that I have been sober 19 years and one day, but a bump. And who's counting? I'm counting. Yeah, I got a coin. I just came back from a party that was put on by a friend of mine from the club, and he works a program in sobriety, Mike, and to all the crew and everybody from Anona West. Oh, my gosh, it was great partying with you, and we had alcohol-free partying. How's that? We did not drink any alcohol. In fact, I sweated up probably a gallon of water, and I need to drink some electrolytes to make myself stay healthy. But I'll tell you what a great time it was going to a party that, didn't have drugs or alcohol, okay? And we had a great time, and we socialized, and we had competition. We played bags, and the guys were competitive. And I remember, man, when we'd play bags or horseshoes when we drank, oh, my gosh, it would be horrible. It would be horrific. People would get angry, if they thought you cheated, everybody would get pouty and upset. And today we just laughed, and it was like no big deal. And if somebody else won, you congratulated them. If you won, you didn't really walk around too much and rub it in people's faces. You know, that's the difference of being sober. That's the difference working a sober program, having fun with people, not at their expense, but with them, but not at their expense. So we're going to talk about, what are we going to talk about? Hey, it's Labor Day weekend, okay? We hope you're having a good, safe Labor Day week, okay? Tomorrow is Labor Day. It's a national holiday, so if you're off, relax. If you're a fireman or a police officer or somebody that we need, airline pilot or something, hey, thank you very much for your service. We appreciate it, okay? The best thing we can do is stay sober and not be on your agenda to help out, to have to save and, and if you had to save us, it's not because we did something because we were drinking. So, okay, I'm a little wound up because I just walked in the door. I took somebody to this picnic, not as a date, but as somebody. I knew this person really needed to get out of the house. You know what I mean? It's not enough to just work a program, but you really need to socialize. You need to know that there's other people that do other things outside of the program and do it sober. And when you do that, when you realize that, it's a lot easier, and it's funny because we all do this, and we talk about the fact that we don't drink and that we don't drug, and it's like nothing. Nobody has a problem with it, but you know what? It's funny because in today's world, if you talk and let people know that you don't drink, there's still this stigma. People go, oh, well, too bad. Are you okay? You're a good person. And, you know, hope everything's well. And, you know, again, you don't need to do that. Not for me, not for anybody. Our addiction is our addiction. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to break our addictions. And tonight we're going to talk with somebody who had a firsthand experience with an addiction. Again, and addictions are addictions, but this was a pretty nasty one. Let's see if we can bring on the air my friend, my new friend, Arna. Arna, are you out there?
Hello?
Are you there? Hello, can
Hello?
You hear me? Arna?
Yes.
Is that you?
Yes.
And welcome. You're on time. You're a very timely person. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I was just setting the stage and talking to, you know, letting people know, getting them settled in. I was getting settled in because I ran a little late. I was at a party with a bunch of people from the club that I, you know, I work my program, Alcoholics Anonymous program, with. And we had a great time for the last 4 hours. We socialized, ate a lot of food, drank all kinds of pop and water and tea and stuff like that. But, I mean, it was a great time. We played some games. Nobody got out of line. It was a great time. And that's what we can do sober, too. And a lot of people that, you know, haven't ever experienced something like that. I brought a couple of newcomers, and their eyes were, like, wide open. They were just, like, totally amazed that people can have a party without any booze, without any drugs or anything like that, and still have a great time. And this friend of mine thanked me for inviting her to come. I just knew that she needed to. But you've had a lot of personal experience, haven't you, with addictions?
Yes, very personal experience. My son was addicted to painkillers, prescription painkillers, and we discussed that this week, and it was a very hard place to be as a mother to live with that addiction, or to watch it, I would say watch it. I didn't really live with him, but I had to watch him go down his road.
Now, how did he get started on addiction? You know, how did his addiction, was there like a beginning to it? Did you mentioned that he had an accident or hurt himself sports-wise?
Yes. He was night before a bicycle marathon for a charity, 100-mile bike ride. He was in San Francisco and was coming home from dinner, and he got hit on his bicycle rounding a corner and was pretty banged up, but sustained long-term injury and was prescribed painkillers and got addicted to oxycodone.
Yeah, and I heard that's a tough drug to get on and tough drug to get off. I mean, you
it
know.
Seemed that way, yes.
So when did you become aware of the fact that he was addicted to this?
Probably, well, since he was living in San Francisco, I didn't see him on a regular basis, but I would say probably a year and a half after that, I noticed some behavior changes, and, you know, when I saw him visually, he was not necessarily able to focus. He was kind of starting to do some nodding off, like he was tired, and it probably took another, probably the third year into this, where it became really apparent to me, and my struggle then became getting the family on board to see what was happening, since none of us lived in the same area. We did not have the opportunity to all get together on family occasions. We had family living in London and Boston and L.A., Arizona, Northern California, you know, north of where I live. So we were rarely ever all together. So, in fact,
now,
we were never all together.
Well, okay, all the other family being immediate family, extended family, who?
His father and brother and sister and extended family. And nobody really thought anything was really wrong other than he was tired or working too hard, or I don't, no one really could see the signals. His girlfriend wouldn't even admit it, so.
So what was the deciding, what was it? I mean, what did it for you? I mean, were you the one that identified it, or did somebody else bring it to your attention?
Well, you know, I kind of started right near the end of when he really, when it became, how would you say, when his girlfriend threw him out, those few months before I did see him, and the signals were a change in keeping commitments, not talking on the phone, like cutting me short, secretive, you know, like just very secretive about what he was doing. And I became increasingly worried and thought maybe he had a serious neurological problem. I mean, because he couldn't keep his eyes open. And, you know, I convinced him to go to a doctor. He went to the doctor. But, of course, there became some hormone issues, which that seemed like, wow, that was it. But we found out later that the hormone issues were being triggered by the drugs. And at that time, he was, using, I don't know if he was still, he might have been using oxycodone. He was also breaking up Xanax and snorting that. So it got pretty heavy. And I kind of talked to my other son in Boston and asked him when he came out for Christmas if he could help me with his brother. And he didn't really know what to do. But lo and behold, on Christmas Eve day, his brother found a pill on the bathroom floor, and it didn't belong to anybody. So we, Christmas Day, scheduled an intervention, and the small amount of family that was here, we had to throw an intervention together. And it was pretty stressful. So.
Well, you just decided to throw an intervention. I mean, just where did you get the idea of an intervention or you know, when you recognized...
Well, we needed to do something. We needed to do something. His life was, you know, really going in a downhill spiral. And, you know, so we went and had a little powwow and started calling interventionists on Christmas Day. And we made maybe 5 phone calls, and we got a response that someone would, you know, respond and be able to come Christmas night. And so he showed up after dinner, and we didn't really have a lot of time to prepare. We all wrote letters, and since, and I've watched some of these shows on TV, but really he came in, introduced himself. Hello, my name is Richard. I'm from Family Focus Intervention. I'm an addict, and I'm here to conduct an intervention. So it was just like on TV. I'd never seen one before. And we all read our letters, and it was a lot of tears. And at the end of the intervention, my son chose to, he had a choice to go to detox or to leave the house. And he'd been staying at my house for 2 weeks. And so he packed up his stuff and left the house and disappeared. So.
Oh, my gosh. Now, how did that feel?
Oh, I was a basket case. It was felt terrible not knowing where he was, whether he was alive, whether he'd had an accident. And I found out a few months later he did get hit by a truck on the freeway. I didn't get the whole story, but his car was pretty much mashed up. Said he was pushed into a guardrail, but maybe he fell asleep at the wheel. I don't really know, but he survived that. And you know, just kind of kept denying that he had a problem and he didn't need help. And it just, that went on for a good 2 years, having to, he moved, he went across the country, he got jobs, he changed jobs, lost his jobs, pretty much lost everything.
Did he stay in touch with you during this period of time?
Sometimes reluctantly. I kind of had to use social media to track down some things where he, you know, who he was living with, and I was able to kind of keep an eye from afar just in case he ended up in the emergency room or homeless. So I kind of did what I could when I could, and had quite a struggle with my ex to get him on board with where my son was at that point in his addiction. That was probably one of my big struggles, was, you know, trying to keep everybody working in the same direction. And that was what the family focus interventionist worked with me on, was just trying to kind of all of us have the same message. He did a great job. He talked to people. He'd call them. He'd call the family. He would answer my texts, answer my calls during those 2 years. And he pretty much predicted how this would all shake down, so to speak. And he really helped me a lot, even though my son didn't really like him, because he saw through the addiction behavior. And so as it ends right now, my son's in a good place, but it was not, as I said to you, I wouldn't wish living with an addicted family member. I think being a mother is even the worst. And I wouldn't wish it on my enemy. And it's a lot of pain to have to watch a loved one just pretty much destroy their life. And you live in fear that they won't survive it.
Yeah, I get it. That would be a tough thing. I can't imagine what mothers of, you know, that's why I wanted you to come on the show, is because, you know, I have a mother, and I don't know. If, you know, I wasn't addicted to drugs, so to say. It was mostly alcohol. And my mother she was a staunch Catholic. And her answer to everything was, I'm going to pray. I'm just going to pray. I'm going to keep praying. At a time when, you know, I rebelled against her prayer, basically, you know. So it's good to see somebody taking, you know, I mean, did the shows that you saw on TV, were they helpful to inspire you to call an interventionist?
Well, no, I didn't know anything about prescription addiction. I knew nothing about it. I knew about alcohol addiction, but nothing to do with pills. And it's really amazing, because my son was getting drugs in the mail, and by mail, and, you know, it was before Christmas, and he kept saying, oh, I'm getting packages for Christmas, when he was here those 2 weeks, and forbade me from opening the mail. And so we kind of made a decision, my husband and I, that I wouldn't, but I kind of knew it was pills, but he was 28 years old. I really didn't feel that I could do that, even though my instinct was to open it and confront him. But what I learned in this process was that I was told this by a specialist, it isn't a self-teaching disease, addiction, and that each person will have their own learning event, whatever that is. If it's an overdose, if it's losing your family, losing your house, losing your job, having a friend overdose. And you know, the two worst drugs to get a rehab or to go cold turkey is alcohol and oxycodone. Those are the most dangerous drugs to go cold turkey from. So you do need professional help, and you do need support, and, you know, 12 steps, if that's what helps you, you do need to have professional help if you're very addicted to those two substances, because they are fatal if you just go cold turkey, depending on your level of addiction, of course. I mean,
of course.
All addictions are not equal.
Well, alcohol, I can go to the local store and buy it. There's nobody going to stop me unless, you know, they feel I'm drunk. But it's oxycodone. How did your son, was he being prescribed these by a doctor? Did anybody?
Originally, and then, you know, and then I really don't know how he got into the mail order drug. You know, I really don't know how he went about that, but I understand that's not a hard thing to do, and it's criminal, and this whole oxycodone thing is criminal because it's so dangerous. You know, it's just life-destroying.
Even though I'm an alcoholic in recovery, I can't even imagine what that must be like. And, you know, so how did the Christmas end up when your son walked out and took off? I mean,
was not a very merry Christmas, let me tell you. It was like shock because we didn't, you know, his brother and I kind of had counted on that he would go to rehab and detox.
Yeah.
And there was a bed waiting for him. And when he didn't, we were just scared to death because the interventionist knew that he had been high and he denied it. My son denied it. And I liked the interventionist because he didn't sugarcoat anything. And then, of course, I don't think my son liked it because he didn't sugarcoat anything.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, yeah, were you like cheering on going, yeah, see, you're seeing what I'm seeing, and you're finally being able to...
No, we were all in tears. Everybody was crying. We were reading the letters, and everybody was in tears. It was so sad.
You didn't have a lot of time to prepare for this. So how did this, you know, tell me, describe what you called everybody and said, hey, our son's got this addiction. We think he's got an addiction. Because you really weren't sure, were you?
Oh, I was at that point.
Oh, you were.
Yes.
You were convinced. Okay.
Oh, totally convinced. And his brother was because he found the oxycodone on the bathroom floor. So he knew because he's an engineer, and he's like, what do you want me to do? I need proof. Well, okay, you just happened to get the proof. My son did a great job. He got on the phone, contacted his stepsister in London, contacted his father in Boston, contacted my addicted son's girlfriend up in Northern California, and everybody wrote letters, emailed them, and we all had the letters. We probably had 10 readings, and we just went through, and, you know, we were just prepped. We didn't have a pre-meeting. We were just prepped to write a letter about how sad this made us and how we remember all the good things and the good behavior, and we hoped that my son would take the help, and he didn't. And it was one of the worst days of my life.
I can imagine what, you know, after this, then he walks out. I mean, he actually stood there during the whole time. He didn't leave while you guys were reading these letters?
No, he sat there kind of in a stupor, kind of like, I'm here, and, yeah, I'm listening, but, you know, it doesn't really apply to me. He was probably drugged.
Probably was high. Okay, yeah.
He was numb, I guess. I don't know. But he took the letters with him and packed up his stuff and packed up his car and left. And I guess he went couch surfing.
Couch surfing? Looking for a place to crash? Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What happened now, with
this
girlfriend?
This is a 28-year-old successful executive who has totally blown his life. So this is not a person who was just a loser, so to speak. He had goals, he achieved his goals, he succeeded, he had job promotions, he had responsibilities, he was a shining star. So.
And then it just you guys sat there and watched. You, as a parent,
had to watch,
you paid.
Yes.
You were watching this dwindle away, and
yes.
how did he write it off? Like, no big deal, or, you know, what's, you know.
I don't have a problem.
Yeah. Don't have a problem.
There's no problem. I don't have a problem. And I'm sure that's pretty common.
It is common.
I don't think that's unique.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing about, and that's one of the things that we talk about this is because we're not that unique. You know, we think that we are, that, you know, nobody understands us, nobody has been through the situation that we have, but we haven't really socialized and talked about it. Most people don't talk about when we have issues and problems, and certainly not to your mom. You don't walk up and say, hey, Mom, I got this drug problem. I mean, you know, the fact that you paid such close attention was pretty amazing, and the fact that you were able to react and to make a difference, even if it was just for that moment. That was incredible. That's what I said. When I started talking to you, I'm going, wow, I wanted to hear more about that because we need more moms like you. We need more people to step up to the plate and say, you know, there's something wrong here. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
what can we do? The other part was, how did you know what to do? That was the part that kind of amazed me.
I don't know. I just instinctually knew we needed to do an intervention, and there's no way we could have successfully had one. And not that it was successful, but it was successful in opening everybody's eyes. And at that point in the process, that was the beginning of us rallying around Eric. And I'm sorry, but I shouldn't have said his name, but... That was our process, and the interventionist, Richard, was amazing. He set up an email chain. We all were emailing, including him in the emails, and really trying to draw him into, you know, the support system that we were, you know, trying to set up. But as time went on, my son threatened that he would have nothing to do with it, and if I continued, he wouldn't talk to me, and, you know, just this, like, control, you know, controlling the situation. So it was hard to watch the slide. It was just hard. It wasn't, ow, and the thing that I learned, too, it's not just a slide totally. It's like there's ups and there's downs and there's peaks and there's valleys. And in the 12 steps, you learn you're powerless. And as a family, many times you're powerless. But I really did feel that when a window would open, I had to reach in. Or when a door would open, I'd have to reach in, whether it was to my ex or to his brother. I'd have to reach in and try to, you know, reach in for that moment. And try to work through that, not with money, not with food, not with anything material, but with a opening, try to open my son's eyes to what was happening, I guess. So, a lot of resistance.
Well, what a commitment as a parent. You know, again, not everybody is as fortunate to have somebody, you know, capable of number one, paying attention and seeing the problem, and even if you did, to react to it in a manner that was, you know, somewhat helpful. And how's your son, you know, how's he doing today, can I ask?
Yes, I think he's doing great. He has, he went through rehab in January and some sober living experiences, and he's working a couple jobs and running marathons now, so I know if he's running marathons, he's committed to his physical health and, you know, working back on his goals, you know, reaching goals again and, you know, holding himself to a higher standard that he, you know, can achieve, and I'm sure he'll end up back out in California once he gets through his, you know, his process of the year that he committed to. And so I hope he's going to be okay. I'm not Pollyanna to think that this is all fixed and done, but I'm very hopeful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, what was the deciding factor for him? Does he talk to you about it at all, candidly?
Well, he had a huge job that he was let go from in October, and then he was living in New York, and I guess he went and got a bartending job, which I was like, oh, that's good, bartending, that's great. You're an addict and you're bartending.
Yeah.
And I think he lost that job, and he was pretty much at the point where his roommate was not wanting to carry him, and it was very cold in January in New York this year, and so we took that window to, again, ask him to go to rehab, and he accepted because I think he finally saw that his options were very low at that point, because I think his addiction and depression were becoming more than he could manage. It just became more than he could. He couldn't run anymore. There was nowhere else to run. You know, he was facing his own reality at that point.
Wow, the fact that he recognized that, though, is pretty good. I mean, some people take it to their death. I mean, they just don't get it, you know, for whatever reason. And the fact, I don't know, maybe it was all the setup that you spent the time talking to him. Were you guys really close when he was younger, as a sibling or a child or whatever you want to
call it? He was always, I thought we were close, but he's always a very independent, strong-willed as a child, and, you know, very intelligent, very social, and was, you know, he did things his way, and he wasn't the easiest child to raise, certainly, but I come from a teaching background, and I really, you know, I kind of understood him probably more than he would like me to think that I did, and I just don't give up. I'm very principle-based, and I just couldn't give up, and I had to go through my own process. You know, that's what they kept telling me, the interventionist, take care of yourself, and I think that process is there for people that love an addict, that they have to learn to take care of themselves, because in the event that the addict doesn't make it, you're going to have to be as strong as you can. And I really did the things I thought would help, and knew that I did all that I could do without enabling. It really is important that the people that love the addict don't enable them, because it just delays the process.
Yeah, that's got to be a hard thing for a mother to not want to do. How did you manage that?
Well, I kind of believe in a little bit of tough love, not to extremes, but I, you know, I made my kids earn money to buy their cars. I didn't give it to them. Just things like that. And they got jobs. They had to work for things, and that's that ethic, that value system, that Midwest value system. You know, I just had that strongly implanted in me, and those are values I believe in. So.
Well, okay. Now, during this spousal support, this was a husband that you were married to. Was he the father of the child, or was he an ex-husband?
Yes. And the father of my son. Yes.
Okay. And were you married are you married, or were you married during through this?
So yes, you had. Yes, I am, and my current husband is very supportive and, you know, very supportive of me, very clear on where my son was and, you know, realizing that my son hadn't come to, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but he really hadn't grasped any of this, accepting that he was addicted. And so, you know, he was supportive of me. It was very painful, I'm sure, for him to watch me suffer, because I did. I had a lot of sleepless nights. I'd wake up wondering if my son was alive, and I'd go to bed hoping that he was still alive. Because there were a lot of times I didn't hear from him and didn't know how he was and couldn't see him and couldn't look him in the eye and couldn't see if he was nodding off or, you know, I didn't have visual cues on anything after that, after he walked out of my house. So that was hard.
I can imagine how hard it is. So you stuck with it. You stuck with him. You basically just let him know you were there. Is that correct? You didn't just go cheat?
Right. We would, we would play kind of like good cop, bad cop. I would, finally after, a year and a half, and my son did come home, a little over a year ago to pack up some stuff and take it back, and ended up we had a confrontation, and he got upset the same way he did at the intervention and walked out. And at that point, I just really needed a break from, engaged my ex, and we kind of played good cop, bad cop, so that somebody could stay in touch with him. And because they didn't live in the same city either, and just so that we could keep communication open. We needed to keep the communication open. I did not believe in completely, don't ever let them in your house, although I have to say, you know, he really wasn't welcome to stay here in that state, but we just needed, I think each of us needed to know that he was alive. And so we kind of switched roles, and my ex took over good cop and I was the bad cop, and, you know, it was okay. It was okay because I could work through him and kind of give him my ideas of what was really happening, you know, either getting information from my other son, getting information from my addict son's roommate, and kind of just keep the information flow going. And that was part of the awareness of having the other family members aware of really what was going on, because that became another battle, and that was another battle in the beginning for me for a long time, is just getting everybody rowing the same boat. So that so we're all kind of aware and pushing in the same direction.
The fact that you had family that, I mean, rally to, you know, join you to help out, I guess that's a cool thing too. And it's, you know, I'm speaking personally because, you know, I don't remember anybody in my family other than telling me to get lost, you know, because they got tired of all my shenanigans, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just the fact that, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm listening to your story, and some of it sounds like my story a little bit, but, you know, like anybody with an addiction would probably have the same, you know, would tell you the same thing. They probably went through something similar, but not quite, and it's just amazing. That's why I was asking for you to join us tonight, because, you know, you bring a different perspective that we don't get to always see, you know, from the,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
at the tables. We don't, you know, hear your story. Now, Did you involve yourself in any programs such as Al-Anon or, you know, Arcanine?
Well,
not Arcanine.
Narconon.
Well, I went to Narconon after, probably within the month after my son walked out, and that's a 12-step program for family of addicts, kind of probably like Al-Anon, and the stories that I was listening to, the people were talking about their loved one being in jail and being in prison, and, you know, they were so happy they were there because they knew they were safe, and at that point, I could not wrap my head around any of it. I just went, oh, I can't even deal with this. This is just horrendous. So I didn't stay, and it was the, and I probably should have gone to Al-Anon, but I didn't. I just refused to go back after a couple visits because I couldn't be where they were. I'm thankful my son is in jail, so I know he's alive. But through that journey and some of those nights, I would have almost, I totally understood they're feeling my son is in jail and I know he's alive, because the not knowing is the really scary unknown part of addiction that a loved one goes through when they don't know if their addict is going to be okay. And that's the worst. It's just worse. It's the worst.
Yeah, well.
And I couldn't let go of that. I could not let go. I got better. I got better at not having obsessive thoughts, but it didn't happen. It wasn't a quick process.
That's got to be, but really, I mean, you know, we hear a bunch of addictions, and somebody once told me they were addicted to being, you know, to chaos. I can't imagine what it would be like to have to fight an addiction to want to know what, or not even addiction, just wanting to know what's happening to your loved one.
It's a obsessive compulsive thinking. I wonder if they're okay. I wonder if they're okay. I wonder if they're going to live. I wonder if they're buying drugs in an alley. I wonder if the drug dealer is going to come after. You know, it's like all this, you know, a lot of TV in your head.
You get your own little reality TV going yourself, right?
Yeah. Well, the reality TV kind of helped me. There's a show called Drugs, Inc., and it's, you know, on one of the cable channels, and I watched about 20 episodes of that and really kind of understood some of the thinking that I just couldn't understand, because, as I said, I didn't know anything about illegal drug use. I just didn't know about it. But I've since found out, and it's so funny because I have some friends. I didn't really talk about this with a lot of people, but I had a couple friends that knew me well, and I let them know that my son was an addict, and it was like two of my very close friends called me within like a few months and asked me for the interventionist phone number because there's one son was using alcohol, another was using heroin, and one was like 19 and the other was 28. So it's very prevalent, and the more people I tell about it, everybody knows somebody who's an addict. I can't even believe it. Whether it's alcohol or pills or heroin, or it's rampant. It's really scary, actually. Because
yeah,
it's a lost person.
Well, and that's it. And, you know, again, that's what, well, now you understand part of the reason why we do this show is to let people know that, you know, number one, it's okay if you have an addiction. You're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
You're not that unique person,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the other part is that, you know, I found a new way of living, which I didn't know how to live because, now, and that's, I want to ask you that question. I was around alcohol most of my life, okay, and it was, you know, it was like secondary of a way of life, a living. I just figured that everybody drank. That was an accepted norm. What was it like for you in your life? Did you have, you know, did your son, you know, was this just strictly from his oxycodone and his accident? Or was there any addictions or anybody in your family that had any type of drinking issues?
Well,
or
my parents drank alcohol all my growing years, but theirs was pretty much a Saturday night routine and party very hard. And anytime there was a party, there was alcohol. And it wasn't always a very pleasant experience as a child. So I am the daughter of, I would say, alcoholics.
Okay.
But it was social alcohol use.
Is there a difference? Is there a difference? I don't know. I mean, I've never heard anybody say social alcohol.
You know, well,
I mean, You're pretty smart. You've been through a lot of stuff. I've never heard anybody put it that way, but, you know, maybe there is something to it. Social alcohol or unsocial alcohol or...
Well, how about this? Okay.
Okay.
If you drink to the point that you're so flippin' drunk, I don't know that that's social alcohol use.
Okay. So people that can drink... Well, I'm just
crazy
saying, people that can drink, and they have maybe a higher tolerance or an ability to handle alcohol in larger quantities.
I don't know.
And they don't. What's that?
I don't know. I'm no expert on that.
No, I'm just asking. I mean, again, I'm just exploring. And I don't get a chance often to talk to somebody like yourself. And so, you know, please, if I'm asking questions that are out of line, stop me. This isn't meant to. This is really just, you know, for me, and that's what the show is. I try to bring my personal inquisitiveness to the show, you know, to guide, direct it, you know, or whoever has.
I'm laughing because I just remember my parents drinking on Saturday night, and there were always fights, and it was crazy.
How did you escape it?
I couldn't.
No, I mean, a lot of times alcoholism is passed down. You know, the argument is that it's passed down. And I'm one of the people that believe that I didn't have a drinking disease. I had a thinking disease, okay? So I think that there's, like, some wires loose in my brain that, you know, sometimes when things get tough, my first reaction is I want to run and escape, okay? I want to hide, you know, I want to get away. And that's what I did when I drank is I drank to escape, to get away from, you know, the situation. Maybe I wanted to, you know, celebrate the situation. But, you know, when I took the alcohol away, I didn't stop. You know, I didn't get rid of all those thinking processes. I still had the thinking processes, and I had to face, you know, those issues, and it was tough. Mm-hmm. I had to work at it. Like today, as dumb as it sounds, I'm at this Labor Day party that one of the guys from the club throws. He throws it annually, and it's nice, and, you know, a bunch of people get together. And, you know, yesterday I celebrated 19 years of continuous sobriety.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, and I didn't make it to a meeting with these people, but, you know, to me it was important that, you know, I shared that with them. So I said, hey, I got an announcement to make, and, you know, everybody stopped and listened. I said, you know, I celebrate 19.
Aww.
And it was great to have people, you know, I mean, there's people in there. I've watched them, you know, some, there's one or two that had longer time than I did, maybe three, and then the, you know, balance of them have less. But, you know, one of the reasons why we do say that, it's it's good to recognize when we've had a success like that. But the other part is I want other people to know that they can get it too. You know, it's not – I'm not anybody special. I don't – you know, I didn't luck out and, like, have a great mother who went out of her way to help me get sober and stuff, you know, which, you know, that's a real gift. I mean, just hearing you say that, you know, I feel a little bit envious.
Thank
I gotta
you.
Yeah, I mean, that's just – that when you told me that the first time, I you know, that's another reason why I wanted to talk to you because, you know, that's really special. I mean, to hear it, to see it.
It didn't feel special. It felt like it was my job. It didn't feel special. It felt like a lot of, I don't know, maybe I had my problem because I wanted to save his life. I mean, I wanted him to come out of it because I knew what he was and I knew all that he was capable of, and I had to see him destroy that, and that's not what you want for your child. So to me, there was no other choice. But as I said, I did not enable him. I did not give him money. I did not do those things. He had to, because they tell us, this is what I learned in intervention, you have to let somebody fall, and the longer you help them, the more you help them, the longer it is before they hit their bottom teaching event. So you can't give them money and things like that. Cannot. And that's just the strength that I had because I knew it would not help him. It's like when you give your child medicine, you know it makes them sick, and you give them vaccines, and you know they're going to cry, and you get their teeth filled, and you know it's going to hurt, but you have to do it. So it's just that responsibility as a parent. You have to do it. You have to not help them that way.
And where'd you get this information and knowledge? I mean, it's right. You're right. It's powerful stuff, but it's sometimes, I think it's for a parent, it's sometimes the hardest thing for them to do. They just don't want to see their kid in pain anymore. And there's a certain degree of guilt that I know that comes along with it, you know, parents thinking that maybe they're part of the reason. How did you escape that?
Well, you know, I wondered if because I got divorced, if that was, you know, created this. But, you know, my son has ADHD. He was diagnosed when he was like 7 at UCLA. And my background is special education, teaching. So I kind of understood him from that perspective. And I still don't believe that that isn't a contributing factor to his drugging himself. I really know that stress is a precipitating factor, and maybe the accident and the pain, that's a great excuse. He was in a high-stress job. But I just instinctually knew that I couldn't help him by giving him money. It's the worst thing. You can't learn until you have pain. We learn from pain and we learn from pleasure. And that's a very basic human condition. And so the only way that he was going to learn was to lose what he lost, whatever that was to him, whatever that meant to him. You know, I thought when he lost his girlfriend and got kicked out of his apartment, that would be enough. But it obviously wasn't. So he had to go through his own journey. And I tell you and your audience that getting professional help is very important. And the interventionist kept me focused on what I needed to do. Not that he told me, but he told me the story, what would happen. And I swore he was a fortune teller because he knew the story. He knew the story. He's helped so many people, and he knows how the story goes. And everybody has their story of addiction. It's the names change, the drugs or alcohol changes, but the story is the same. And that's just common sense, I think.
Well, I common sense sometimes gets, interfered with emotions, again, personal experience.
I had plenty of emotion, trust me. I had lots of emotion. I had a lot of pain. I didn't escape that without pain. And I still told you this, and I'll say it again. I wouldn't wish that pain on an enemy. It's so powerful. And destructive, and that's why they'll say take care of yourself, focus on yourself, try to get yourself healthy, do the things you need to do for yourself. It's hard to do, but that's the message I kept hearing.
That is the right message, take care of yourself, absolutely. People always, it's amazing when people come to me and they say, what can we do for you? Nothing. I mean, I go to a party and somebody says, can I get you a drink? And then they recoil and say, oh, I'm so sorry I offered you a drink. And I'm like, why? Because it's my disease. I have to figure it out.
It's your choice.
Yeah, it's got to be my choice. And that's what strengthens me. And that's why people say, and I had to, I blame the world on everything. I blame my parents on everything. I probably had a lot of reason. Well, I think there was a lot of reason too. I'm not going to deny that. They were kind of knuckleheads at times. But I grew up with an active alcoholic father, who never missed a day of work. Pretty much. I mean,
right.
He left work at like 7 in the morning, and he got back home about 10 o'clock at night. But he stopped work about 5 o'clock, and he drank at his job. He had a job, his own business, that he was able to, entitle himself to drink. And, he stuck around. His business, he kept it open till 10 o'clock at night, and that was his excuse. So I'd stick around and keep an eye on. But, by 6 o'clock, he was halfway to Mars, and he was, but again, everybody has a story and a different one, and it's made me who I am. But, I'm always fascinated when I'm hearing, a mom. My mom, she suffered through my brother. I have six brothers. And
wow.
Yeah, six brothers who were, unfortunately battered and abused by my father, and his way of thinking that he is, educating them. And then you throw the alcohol in, it gets a little bit more twisted and torn. But, she's a Catholic, and she is, that's all she does is pray right now. She just prays and prays and prays. It's hard for her to, grasp, what's going on. She wants to own all the problems, and she shouldn't. But that's why, when I'm listening to you, such wisdom. Now, you said you were a teacher. That was your background?
Yes, that was my background. I was a speech and hearing therapist, and I worked in the schools and worked with a huge student population, a lot of age ranges, and was exposed to a lot of different special needs.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking physical needs or emotional needs? Or?
I was trained in all of it, but most of my population was basic speech therapy needs and learning disabilities.
Uh-huh.
So I had a great foundation for understanding children's needs, I guess you could put it, and understanding the differences in children and understanding boundaries and choices. And so,
it
didn't...
It had to be...
Didn't, mm-hmm.
But did you ever in your life thought, you know, think, I mean, it sounded like your son didn't start into it until he was later on in his life. Correct?
No, but he was always willful and independent, and he was as much as of a leader as he is, he was also a follower, and I didn't like his friends in high school, and, you know, he was president of his student body, he worked, he got good grades, his IQ was very high. So he functioned, but he was just strong-willed, always strong-willed. So.
Yeah, that's a common denominator with a bunch of people in programs of addiction. Strong-willed,
so.
Intelligent, highly intelligent, most
mm-hmm.
of us. But, you know, I will take that.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I always struggle with focus. I have to admit, sometimes I have that issue, you know. You know, the ADD, you know, ADHD.
Along with high intelligence. It's part
yeah,
of
yeah.
being highly intelligent.
Yeah, I'm so grateful. I used to be upset by it, and now I just laugh because I always just tell myself, well, you know, I could multitask like the best of them, you know.
Exactly.
And that's what, you know, because at the wow, I mean, when they're always trying to put Ritalin in you and you know, it's
uh-huh.
in a sense telling me that the way I'm living my life isn't right. You know, you don't know because, you know, you got to listen to somebody. But, again, it's just great. Now, how many kids do you have totally, by the
two.
Way?
I have two sons.
Two sons, okay. And your other son's no problem.
My other son's a biomechanical engineer, brainiac. Actually, my addict son has a little higher IQ, so by a point
well,
or two. So, you know, it's just different personalities and different people, as any
yeah.
mother will tell you. And fathers, too, will tell you that. And, you know, each child is unique and different. And even though you try to parent the same, you can't always parent the same because their response isn't the same to the same structure rules. So you might know that having five brothers, six brothers. Yeah.
Yeah,
probably
six
you
sisters.
See a difference.
Well, you
so,
do, you know, and yeah, it's funny because my mom's learned to say that, you know, my dad actually, before he died, I think, you know, he was smart enough to the grandchildren. He was always good with the grandchildren. There's my favorite Danny, and there's my favorite, you know, whatever, Sarah, and everything. You know, he didn't pick anybody's favorite, but they were all his favorite person, you know, like favorite Arna and favorite Dan, you know. So he was kind of that. It was so funny, though, when my dad finally passed away, because the guy struck fear in people's hearts. I mean, it was one of those things, you know, you kind of went along with him, and you were happy when he was happy. You know, it was like, oh, my God, he's happy. Don't piss him off, you know. Don't
exactly.
You know? I'm saying it, and, you know, here my mom, when my dad finally passed away, okay, you know, she thought she would be able to just step right in to take over the, you know, as a matriarch, the roles of, there's my favorite, whatever. And you know what? The kids, they just all stayed away from her at first. I mean, they had a hard time readjusting because, you know, it wasn't the same person, the same, you know, she didn't command the same respect that my dad did. Out of fear. It wasn't like, you know, hey, because he was a pretty smart guy too, but mostly a lot of it was more out of fear than it was
mm-hmm.
out of, hey, you know, you're just mm-hmm. the greatest guy in the world, Len. But, well, it's interesting. I mean, and the fact now, your current husband, that's the same husband you went through all this with?
Yes.
Okay, and what a stellar person he must be.
He pretty much is, yes. He's kind of the glue. He's a good glue gun. I've never said that before, but he held me up and, you know, kept me focused, and I thank him. And my mom supported me a lot too, so And then I finally, and I'm going to have to end soon after this, but, oh, gosh, about a year ago, I was in my medical building and ran into a woman in the elevator, and we were talking, and she told me about her children. No, it was actually before Christmas. She goes, my daughter's a lawyer, and my other daughter's a public relations, and I have a son, he's a drug addict. And I said, well, hi, nice to meet you. I have a son that's a drug addict, too. And this was before my son. This is, like, in November when he started really, like, unraveling. And it was really nice. We kind of became text pals. We met a couple times for coffee. But we kind of held each other up on really bad days when each of us were. Her son is actually in jail, and she's happy because she knows he's alive. So one of those situations. But we text each other, and we kind of just, and it's probably the support you get in meetings. We, you know, when we're having a bad day, we tell the other one, and we're having a good day, we share that too. And so it really helped to have another mother who knew what all of this felt like, and I think that was really a good support for me, an intimate relationship that I could feel comfortable being totally honest with. And it works for me in my busy life. Rather than having to go to a meeting, I'm also in a business that requires me to work on nights and weekends. So it worked for me to just have that text friend. And we met purely by accident with a lot in common. So, as I said, there's a lot of people with similar stories. And if you start sharing, you'll be amazed at how other people are in the process with their addicts. And recovered addict, too, which gives you hope.
Yeah, that's incredible. You know, again, I'm so grateful that you came on the air and share your story with us on the air. And
well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, you were so easy. I mean, we didn't speak much. We connected about something else in the brief conversation, you know, like it was meant to be, and I don't believe in, I used to think of things in coincidences. Today I think that they're miracles that happen for a reason.
Aww.
And you're a miracle that happened in my life, and to come on to share your story, it's, you know, you've helped me, and you've helped other people that are listening, or, you know, and again, I just want to thank you so much for continuing to do that, continuing to share, because it's not something that we should own as an embarrassment. It's the world today. There's not enough. You know what? I will go back. This isn't a religious show, but I will say to you that I believe that we need more God in our world and God in our lives. And when, you know, I'm doing that, I find my life works out so much better.
Aww.
And each has to find, you know, we all have to find our own way, but we also have to be comfortable. I just don't want it shoved down my throat. I don't want it, you know, but that's a whole different other story. But
that's,
you know,
another show.
That's another, like, a whole episode, like episodes of shows and stuff. But we're not going to get there. But I just want to get back to thanking you for coming on the air and sharing.
Well,
and I hope you continue to share, because, you know, just people like me need to hear that other people have gone through it, and it's good to hear how you've gone through it and how you've effectively helped
yourself by
educating. You know, so good for you, and thank you. I hope we stay friends forever, okay? And
okay.
If there's ever anything
well,
I could do for you.
We're kind of Midwesterners, even though I'm in another place now, but truly Midwest at heart, so.
Well, my daughter's living in the South San Diego area. One is in the biogenetic field. She's a stem cell researcher or something. I'm not big time down
there.
Okay,
well, we'll have to chat off the air. So.
Sure, we'll do that. But again, I want to just say thanks again for coming on the air and sharing everything. And I wish you a happy, safe
Anybody wants to talk to me, be sure you can share my information. Feel free to do that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, why don't you give them the number? Okay, give them the number right now. Let them know, and I'll just repeat it later in the show.
Okay.
949-244-0444. Wow. Okay, 949. If you want to talk to Arna in California about her experience and what maybe you can learn from her experience, please feel free to give her a call, area code 949-244-0444. And she'll be glad to share anything she can with you, won't you?
Support.
Support. Okay. Encouragement. Thanks again. You have a good
Thank
night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Thank you for
Bye-bye.
Having me. Bye-bye.
Wow. How cool was that? Okay. Folks, you're listening to The Road to Recovery. That was our guest for tonight, Arna. I thought she was her son was a heroin addict. It turned out he's an oxycodone addict and in recovery and finally found recovery after a few years. But here it was. You got to hear this mom not giving up on her son, okay? And these stories of heroism and, you know, going after your kids to help them out, to let them know that you love. I will tell you, as an addict, okay, as an alcoholic, I will tell you that I wanted my mom and my dad and anybody who loved me to tell me they loved me. I wanted somebody to come after me to let me know that that I meant something to someone. So, you know, if you're in a situation where you have a loved one who is going through the stages of addiction, whether it's alcoholism or drug, it could be prescription medications, whatever it is, you know, don't give up. Don't give up hope. There's always hope. And, you know, if you need some support, call me or call any one of my guests that are willing to share their information. And this Arna is certainly one of courage and a fine example of, you know, somebody doing the next right thing to help their kid. I mean, that just because you involve yourself doesn't mean that your kid's going to get it and is going to recover. But you certainly greatly enhance the opportunity and the probability that it will happen, okay? Or when it happens, that you might be the one that will be there to welcome your son or your daughter or your loved one back into the program and let them know that you love them and care about them. Never stop, okay? No matter what, folks, continue to share the fact that you love your loved ones. That's an important thing. I think that would be one of the best things that I think you could do for anybody, no matter what. You may not be able to control or stop or get them to do anything of a healthy nature for themselves, but never stop letting them know that you love them and you care about them and that they mean something to you, because at that point they're going through, like I was and like I'm listening to this, my guests talk about it. You know, I don't know that we think that anybody cared about us. I don't know that anybody, I felt that anybody loved me or wanted to be with me, etc. And I just lucked out. I mean, the program loved me until I was able to love myself. So, okay, we're going to do a station identification. You're listening to The Link Local Network, Blog Talk Radio, and tonight is The Road to Recovery. We're on every Sunday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, and what we do is just have candid conversations about recovery, about addictions, any type of addictions. You know, it's not just alcohol. I'm a recovering alcoholic, and again, today is 19 years and one day. Hey, ba-dum-ba-dum. But who's counting? I count. I count every day that I'm working. I'm grateful that I have a life. I have a life today that people enjoy and invite me over. And you know, I'm not a family wrecker like I used to be. And I'm not a bad person of all the things that I did. I've learned to grow myself, grow out of those ways. I realize that I can make choices now, that I'm making better choices in my life. And again, the reason why we do this show is to let you know that there are people that recover that have good lives. That's all. I mean, unfortunately, you know, recovery is shrouded by anonymity, okay? And while I believe that it has its place, I think anonymity also needs to, I don't know, we need to step beyond the curtain and the shroud of the you know, the Wizard of Oz, hide behind the curtain. You know, no big wizard. We're just real people working programs that want better lives and made mistakes and realized that maybe, you know, drinking wasn't the best thing for us. Drugging wasn't the best thing. You know, what other experiences? Somebody just told me that a friend from the program, her husband died after going gambling. Now, she didn't say what the reason was. I don't know the reason, but, you know, you think about it. When you gamble all your money away, gambling is another addiction. And when you gamble all your money away to pay your food, to feed your family, you know, that's got to wreak havoc in your mind. And the worst thing that you could possibly do is end your life. And it's unnecessary. Don't end your life. It happens. It's not the best thing that happens, but I'm going to tell you, it happens. And what you do is you shake it off and you move forward, okay? You shake it off and you move forward. Things happen for a reason. Why? Don't know. Don't care. They do happen. But you don't have to, you know, quit and give up everything that you believe in, everything and anything in your life just because what? Because it's not a healthy thing, okay? You know, killing yourself, by the way, is not a very healthy thing. Okay, so there you have it. Now, my guest tonight was Arna from California, my co-host, who's normally around, Ken, missing in action. Don't know, didn't hear from him. That's okay, hope he's having a good time. Maybe he's doing some family stuff. Don't remember if he even told me he had plans, but doesn't matter. He's not here. Show must go on, right? The show does go on. Whether, you know, hey, and if I'm not here someday and you need a meeting or a show or whatever, play back one of the old tapes. That would be good. You could do that if you really need to. This week I'm going to be going to my friends in Indiana. For those of you who know my friends in Indiana, you know, we lost Jim earlier this year, actually right before Christmas. And so, you know, his daughter, Emily, just got her first apartment away from home. She just celebrated her, 22nd birthday. So a lot of good things happening, and life does go on, even if we don't. You know, even if we don't go on, life goes on. And what kind of memory are you going to leave, okay? What kind of memory? Drinking about it, drugging. Let's talk about the different addictions that exist in the world. There's so many. Maybe you're addicted to pornography. Okay, it's a couple $1 trillion business, pornography. Okay, again, spending money you don't have with what? With somebody, for somebody. You know, that's, it's an addiction. What can I say? It's just an addiction. It's not a very good one. None of them. There's no such thing as a good addiction. Okay, so drugs, alcohol, what other? What are other addictions here, folks? Cigarette smoking. Okay, my friend, I don't want to name names, but my friend, okay, went back to smoking cigarettes. Why? Why does somebody go back to smoking cigarettes? I can't explain it. We didn't really get into it tonight, and maybe someday we'll talk about it, but that is an addiction. He was 7 years away from cigarettes, and here he is back drinking. I mean, cigarette smoking again, and I really, really hope that he gets it and gets it again and stops and keeps stop, because that is just such a bad thing for anybody. All these addictions, there's no such thing as a good addiction, you know? You know, if you could find one, tell me, that's great, tell me, and we'll talk about it. By the way, I didn't give the phone number tonight, and I didn't let people know that you can call in. We could have had some questions for Arna. And you can still call in if you have. Area code 323-580-5755. And if you want to reflect on what Arna had to say about being a mother of a son addicted to prescription medications, that would be great. You can call in. Glad to talk to you about that a little bit more. If you were unsettled about some of the things that she said and talked about, or what she did or how she recovered, you know, I got her son back into on track. Feel free to call in anytime. You can email me, too, at Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, at D-A-A-R-E.com. And I'd be glad to take your, if you'd like a response, I'd be glad to respond to you in any way I can. If we need to talk about something or if you have a topic for a meeting, not a meeting, here we go, talking of meetings, holy cow. This is like a meeting. This is definitely like a meeting. But if you have a topic that you want to talk about for one of our shows, our broadcast, feel free to call up. We're glad to incorporate anything that we can into, you know, again, expanding everybody's knowledge and information about what it is like to have an addiction and how to face recovery. You don't have to do it alone, okay? You know, some people find the courage, the strength, the wisdom. I don't know where this lady got it, but God, her son, he probably doesn't realize how fortunate he is to have a mother who is able to hang in there with him. And not just, you know, again, well, I got to say, my mom, she prays a lot. And that's a good thing. You know, I'm realizing today that I can use all the prayers I can get. Okay, how about you? But, you know, on the other hand, you have to take some action steps about staying recovered. You can't just stay in your pity pot and live there. And I'll tell you what, some of the greatest miracles that I've ever been around are people in the program of recovery. You know, again, we were talking. I have one guest. I'm going to try my best. One of these days I'm going to get her to come on the show. I know she's a little PO'd at me because I'm not responding exactly what she wants and how she wants. But, you know, she's welcome to come on the show. And I've asked her because she's addicted to selling drugs. Okay, that's what she said. Now, she's not selling drugs anymore, but that was her addiction. It started out as, you know, she just said, Dan, I mean, that really became my addiction, was to sell the drugs because of the money that's involved and, you know, all the power and authority and whatever you name. So hopefully someday we'll get this young lady on the air and we'll, you know, maintain her anonymity. But I want to know some of this stuff. You know, some of the things that bother an average person on a day-to-day basis, who knows? Maybe something that she has to share might help somebody else. I'm sure she's not the only person that's ever sold drugs, okay? I had another friend from Wisconsin who told me that she was, shopaholic, right? A shopaholic. And she felt the need to shop all the time, so she was working for her local church, and she pilfered, you know, literally tens of thousands of dollars from the church until they finally caught her after a couple of years. And she did time for it. She, you know, and here's a mom. This is a mom, just an average mom. But she just was into, you know, she wanted what the next, you know, the Joneses had. And she wanted it, and she didn't want to wait till she could afford it the way she wanted to. And there she went. She went out and got it and created this big mess having to do with, having the police involved with it. And I'm just telling you, there's all kinds of addictions, folks. There's all kinds. And they are all equally nasty. Now, you heard this young lady tell us that she feels alcohol and, this type of drug to go cold turkey. You know, sometimes you need the help of a professional, absolutely, positively. If you need a professional's help, such as a professional interventionist, I don't know that I would be the best person to do an intervention, but I'd be better than none, okay? So, you know, again, if you need help, call us here at the Road to Recovery, area code 323-580-5755. And again, if you have anything you want to talk about, any topics, you know, anything, you know, feel free to call up. We'll take your call. We'll explore the ideas. If you're having a good night, you can share that. You can share that you're having a good night. Good for you. If you're having a difficult time, share that too. We'll find a way to get through it. Maybe find a way to get back on track. Now, I'm going to read the thoughts of the day for today from the 24-hour a day book written by Hazelton for alcoholics. And it's a great book. I love this book. And it's one of the few books in my life that I've read seven or more times. Now you would think, well, you've been sober 19 years. You think you'd read. No, because I'm not that good of a habit maker. You know, the only habits that I had, you know, is when I drank that were bad habits. You know, I don't maintain the greatest habits, okay? But I get around, and I'm working on it. And again, is 7 years I read this book from front to cover to the back, and it's been a great inspiration. It's a great inspirational book. So let's use that, and I like using it to advance our thoughts for the night. In case there's any other additional thoughts, sometimes I always love to see how it ties into what we're talking about too, because sometimes it's totally, and like I said, there's no such thing as coincidences. I believe in miracles, and there are lots of miracles that take place and happen on a regular basis, and sometimes, you know, they're just right there in front of our nose. We don't even realize it. They're there, and you're like, hey, that was like really cool. And you want to say, what a coincidence. No, not a coincidence. I believe that there's a God out there, and I believe he loves us. And I don't believe that he has turned over control of the world to the devil, okay, to people, okay? And we're here on this earth to decide whether or not we're going to recognize our Heavenly Father created us and his Son Jesus who came to save us, give us eternal life. So I do believe those things, okay? But again, real practical living, and let's talk about it. So, August 34th, the AA Thoughts of the Day. Call on new prospects while they are still jittery. They may be more receptive when depressed. See them alone if possible. Tell them enough about your drinking habits and experiences to encourage them to speak of themselves. If they do wish to talk, let them do so. If they are not communicative, talk about the troubles liquor has caused you. Be careful not to moralize or lecture. When they see you know all about drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic and tell them how you learned you were sick. Am I ready to talk about myself to new prospects? The meditation for the day. Try not to give way to criticism, blame, scorn, or judgment of others when you are trying to help them. Effectiveness in helping others depends on controlling yourself. You may be swept away by a temporary natural urge to criticize or blame unless you keep a tight rein on your emotions. You should have a firm foundation of spiritual living, which makes you truly humble. If you are going to really help other people, go easy on them and be hard on yourself. This is the way you can be used most to uplift a despairing spirit. And seek no personal recognition for what you are used by God to accomplish. A prayer for the day. I pray that I may try to avoid judgment and criticism. I pray that I may always try to build up others instead of tearing them down. You know, which is a difficult thing for guys, this guy especially, when I'm playing games, okay? You know, there's a natural, for me, there's like this natural urge that I want to, like, rule and, you know, dominate and tell people about my ability to dominate and so on. And, you know, it really doesn't matter. In the whole scope of the world, you know, what does it mean? It means nothing. It's like playing these stupid games on the internet, and I play too many of them. Let me tell you, I am not going to be recognized by anybody in particular for winning at Zumba. Okay, Zumba. But yet I like playing it, and I like to challenge. I like this. I have this little unspoken game going with this friend of mine, who I probably only see maybe once a year, if that much. Yet it's fun because I know that she's playing and she knows I'm playing, and we just have the damnedest time because it's just between me and her, and she'll beat me 1 week and I'll beat her the next, and we keep playing, and it's, you know, for some reason it just fascinates the heck out of both of us, and I like it, and I appreciate it. And that's my friend Irene, not Irene, but Irene. So we have our little things that we like to do. Tonight we played, I want to say again, the Mike and Heidi, thank you for an incredible time. You know, and again, people, we need to do more of this socializing and spirit stuff. And you know, we certainly did it when we were drinking, okay? We need to get out of ourselves and do more of this because, again, you know, we talked about it, but, you know, sometimes newcomers need to know that there's more to life and living than just, you know, going to meetings, okay? And certainly, while that's an important step and a value to be had in our lives, okay, we need to constantly develop friendships and let people know that it's okay that, you know, it's okay that I can't drink. I don't have a problem with the fact that I can't drink. I don't know why anybody else would. A problem with me having this. I'm grateful to God, if you hear me talking about it, I'm grateful to my Heavenly Father for the fact that He has given me the opportunity to quit drinking, to quit drugging, to work this program, and to share it with others so they can have the same joys, happiness, maybe even better joys and happiness than I've been granted in my new, like, last 19 years of my life, okay? Now, the 19 years before that, actually, it was 21 years, I think. Let's see, 16 to 38. So it's 22 years. I started drinking when I was 17, probably. So 21 years. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to reflect on the good times and the good memories, and there have been many, thanks to this program of recovery. Thanks to the fact that I learned that, you know, I can be forgiven for all the stupid, bad, unfortunate things that I did, some of which, you know, I had to own up to and face. But today is another day, and I'm grateful for that, you know, because I did face them, and I did, you know, grow beyond them. And I'm going to tell you something, guys. I've had a great life. I've been grateful. This 19 years and no, you know, one day, 19 years and one day was just some of the best years ever in my life. And there are people that I know that I still have issues with that I got to work at. I'm not a perfect person. I keep working on the fact that I got to keep working on it. Do you understand? But you know what? I know better than to give up, and I'm not going to give up, and I don't want you ever to give up, ever. Don't ever give up. If you run out of steam and you really don't want to, you know, continue to stay sober, like I told my friend Dean, you know what? Call me. You don't have to smoke cigarettes. Cigarette smoking is not a healthy thing for you. You know, get it, get through it, grow beyond it, and realize that, you know, that's just killing you, man. And we need to get beyond it. He is important. He's an important person in my life. I've always enjoyed Dean, as most people are. You know, again, don't be afraid to let people know that you care and how much you care about them. Whether they care about you or not doesn't really matter, you know. Doesn't really matter. I guess that's just really all I could say is I just, you know, whether you know that people care about you or not, you know, you are cared for. You are loved. And that's good. Pass that love. Share that love with others, okay? Because sometimes we all need to know that we are cared for. And that's why I said, you know, like that lady that was on the phone, Arna, you know, we want her to know. You know, what better way? Actions do speak louder than words, you know, and here's this woman that constantly just, you know, kept working at letting her son know how much she cared and that she's there for him and that they'll get him help, and he finally got some help. Gosh, he finally, after how many years? 3 years? I don't know if we got the specifics from her, and maybe we'll have her on the air again. Maybe, you know, there'll be an opportunity for her to talk a little bit more and share some more. But, again, certainly enjoyed what she had to share. Know that people and parents out there, can you be that type of a parent? Could you be the type of parent that would, you know, keep, even when your kid is spitting in your face or walking away from you, can you still be there for them and let them know that they mean the world to you, that you still love them, that you care about them? You know, and if you can't, that's okay. That's a human part of you. But, you know, it's an important part that we should let people know enough. You know, I don't think there's enough hugs in this world. I'm a hugger, okay? So I'm just going to tell you right out, okay, that you should hug people, okay? Not in a weird way, okay? Please. But in an appropriate way, in an appropriate manner, and let people know that you care about them. Hugging is best thing. If you don't know what to say to somebody, just hug them. That's really the best thing I could tell you. Just hug a person. Don't worry about saying something intelligent or great. You can say so much with just a hug. Okay? So, again, if and I'm telling you, hugs are incredible. Okay? Do the hugs. We should have a hug day two. Not day. Every day should be a hug day, okay? But we started out last year, and we're doing it again this year, the Great American Smokeout which is when? When did we decide the Great American Smokeout's coming up? And the reason why I'm talking about the Great American Smokeout is because the Great American Smokeout, let's see, where is that? There it is, November 20th of this year. It's the Great American Smokeout. So if you have any type of an addiction, gambling, sex pornography, food, eating, anorexia, bulimia, you know, maybe you're just overweight. You know, if you want a day to shoot for that day, okay? I think it's great that the American Cancer Society picks one day. It allows people to mentally get prepared for what? For getting over their addictions. Oh, excuse me. It was a long day. I played lots of bags. Good bags. I love playing bags. Okay, I love playing horseshoes, but that's because I win all the time. And I play bags, and I'm humbled by the fact that other people are so much better than me at this game of bags. But you know what? Cool game anyway. And it's a lot of fun. And so whoever created it, thank you. And I do also like horseshoes. So someday maybe, you know, want to get together and play a game of horseshoes with me, that would be cool. We could chat. We could talk about addictions. We could talk about recovery. That's what we talk about. How do we talk about it? We just talk candidly about what it is for us, what it means for us, why we appreciate it, why we value it. Why do you appreciate, why do you value being sober? That's the question. Okay, now we're going to also read today from the Daily Reflections. I like the Daily Reflections. This is live show, so I'm yawning on it. Sorry about that. Long day. I'm tired. I'm going to drive to Indiana tonight to see my friends. I'm going to spend the next day or so out there, which would be very cool. I want to say hi to my friends Cora and Meadow. Meadow's my little, she's a little thief. She comes into the office, and I have a thing of candy out on the countertop on top of my desk that she could raid. She knows where my personal stash is. She always raids it. Then she writes these cute little notes from a cute little girl, 6 years old, saying, I took a chocolate, love, Meadow. How wonderful. I want to say hi to Laura, the Alabama mama down in Alabama. I want to say hi to my friend Anna out in New York, my friend Cindy out in New Mexico. Cindy, you'll have to explain how remarrying your husband for a second or third time works for you, okay? I'm fascinated by that. So maybe someday you can call in and explain that, how you managed to do that, or does it work for you? But, you know, and again, if it does, who cares? I mean, and even if it doesn't, it's not anybody's business. I just want to know how you can do that, you know? I don't know that I'd go back and marry any of my ex-wives. I have a few of them. But again, that's why I don't drink, because, you know, I found out that when I stopped drinking, I stopped getting married so many times, okay? So I do want to say hello to my former wife, Patty, out in southern Illinois. I think that's where she's living these days. And, Patty, I hope you're doing well. I love you. I will always love you. And I'm grateful, because if it wasn't for you coming into my life, I don't know that I would have ever found this program of recovery. And God had reasons for us to get together, and I'm so grateful that he did. Our marriage didn't work out very well, but I'm grateful for the fact that because you came into my life, I found this program of recovery. So one day at a time for you and me. All right, nobody's calling in tonight besides Arna. Thank you again, Arna, for your listening. We're going to eating something. No dead air, but my mom told me don't eat with a mouthful, so I'm sorry, but I am. Okay, that was very yummy. I love Butterfingers. Yes, I do. And a little plug for Butterfingers, and I had a color pizza last night from Rosati, so ding, ding, ding. Oh, I got my little sound thing. I forgot. We have the sound thing here. There you go. All right. Applause, applause. Okay, and then I'm going to go to Indiana tonight. So when I'm done, I'm going to skedaddle out of here. Okay, but right now what I'm going to do is I'm going to read, excuse me, the Daily Reflections. Again, this is a book of reflections by AA members for all AA members. And in my mind, I think everybody probably could benefit from working a program of some sort. Okay, August 31st, a unique program. Alcoholics Anonymous will never have a professional class. Okay, we have gained some understanding of the ancient words, freely ye have received, freely give. We have discovered that at the point of professionalism, money and spirituality do not mix. And I agree. This show, by the way, is not endorsed by AA. We are not counselors. We are not clinicians. We're none of those things. We're not doctors. People on the show are who they are. Me, I'm just a recovering drunk, okay? Working a program that works for me. Not always. I don't have to. I have to figure it out. And usually when it's not working, it's something about me that's not working properly, okay? So there you have it. Let's see here. Now, that was from 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 166. I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous stands alone in the treatment of alcoholism because it is based solely on the principle of one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. This is what makes the program unique. When I decided I wanted to stay sober, I called a woman who knew I was a sober member of AA, and she carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me. She received no monetary compensation, but rather was paid by staying sober another day herself. Today I could ask for no payment other than another day free from alcohol. So in that respect, I am generously paid for my labor. Now again, I'm going to say the same thing. I do not make any money doing this show. It doesn't matter. I don't want to. What I want to do is stay sober. Now, I lead and live a very active life. I'm a real estate broker. I own a real estate broker. I manage, I have about 10, 12 people that work for me. And I deal with actual selling property on a daily basis. Yes, I do. I experience the same frustrations that most people do in their day-to-day life when they do business. Maybe a little different because it's real estate related, but not that different because it's still life related. Okay, and that's the reason of the show. I know that if I didn't have this show to do, I would let a lot of these things bother me way beyond a necessary means to bother, be bothered by. I shouldn't, you know, I shouldn't sweat the small stuff. Did you ever hear that? Don't sweat the small stuff. And what is, it's all small stuff. Okay, and I had to learn that doing this program. And, you know, working the program of recovery one day at a time, one step at a time. But I'm grateful that I have. Excuse me, live show. I do. I appreciate it. Excuse me, live show. No, boy. But, again, one day at a time, I think I lost my, I sneezed my thoughts right out of my brain there. I was going to do, my little, I had that little segment where, we're not going to do it tonight. So that's not going to happen. We'll do that next week or something. That was kind of fun. We have a little segment that we do where we talk to, I talk to my little significant other in my brain, you know, and it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny. But, okay, so what are we talking about here? Did I lose track? I did. Darn it. Hate when that happens. I know that they were talking on 60 Minutes about dementia and memory and stuff. And oh, I got to tell you, folks, sometimes I think my mind is gone. I can't even imagine what it would have been like had I not quit drinking. Oh my gosh, life would have been unbelievably ridiculous. I'd have been one of those crazy, kooky people that walk around talking to themselves. And you got to love them because they probably very entertained by them, their own selves, and that's better than not, right? Better than not. But I do this program because, boy, I'll tell you, life can get pretty hectic, pretty frustrating at times, and I just don't want to sweat it. I don't want to deal with the issues, you know, the way I did it before. Because how did I do it before? Oh, I was a mess. I was just a mess. It wasn't good. It was I created calamity and definitely took hostages everywhere until I got into this program. And today, I'm happy, joyous, and free. You hear that, Bobby? Bobby, my former sponsor, Bobby K. Hey, it's Bobby K. Every day on a special day, you know? And I learned a lot of stuff from that sponsor, okay? But I also learned that I needed more and I needed to move on because I started taking his inventory, and that's not a good thing. And I just didn't believe that he was working a program the way I wanted to, and that's okay. You can move on, folks. Not everybody is the ideal person for you to follow in your life. I've had so many bad choices that I made that I started following. Oh, my gosh, I'm grateful for the fact that I was able to get out of following some of those people because it was a mess. Some of these people I put on a pedestal, and then when I found the humanness side to them, I was devastated and destroyed. And whose fault really is it? Well, it's my fault for putting that much faith in somebody like that. There's good heroes out there. We all make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. I'm certainly not a perfect person. Are you? Only person I knew that was perfect. And he is gone from this earth for the moment, but he will return, and I'm looking forward to when he returns. So maybe, he'll go along with me. Who knows? Who knows what he will do? So, again, by the way, if you want to reach our speaker from tonight, Arna is her name, A-R-N-A, A-R-N-A. What a cool name. We should have asked her about that. We had so much we could have talked to her about, but sometimes it's, you just have to let it go where it goes. Some days you get answers to questions you didn't even think you were going to ask, and other days you just say, I guess we got the answers that we needed. But so I do believe we got the answers that we needed, the message that our higher power, my God, wanted us to have for tonight, and I think we did okay, didn't we? We got that stuff, that answers, and Arna was certainly a wonderful person, certainly a delight to talk to. And she given your number if you would like to reach out and talk to Arna at any time about maybe a loved one who is struggling with an addiction, and maybe she can give you some personal experience, strength, and hope of her own to help you out. And that's what this program is all about. It's not just hanging on to it and hiding from the rest of the world and saying, oh, my God, I don't want anybody to know that my family member has an addiction. What did Arna say? She says, man, she met some of the neatest people just by going, yeah, I'm so-and-so, and my son's an addict. And, not that we're proud of it, mind you. Don't get me wrong. It's not what we're talking about. But it is what a reality of who we are in today's world. Addiction is about us. It's around us. It surrounds us every day in every way. And some of us get caught up into it. You can't go around without people knowing people in your life, in my life. I know people in my life that drink, still have problems with drinking, and it's not my business to tell them that they have a problem. Okay? If they're not looking for an answer, I'm not there to give it to them. Because we all learned, and we learned, that unless you're ready to get this program, now you heard Arna. She said the same thing about her son. Until he was ready, he wasn't ready. And if you're not ready, what's the point? Okay? What is the point? We need to stand ready. We need to take care of ourselves so that when and if that time comes, okay, I'm a father. What if my son said, Dad, I've got a problem? I don't know. I hope that I would have the same amount of courage and the strength that this lady Arna has to what? To go and help him. To reach out and show him that there's more to life than just hiding from an addiction and dealing with it. You can recover if you have the capacity to be what? Totally rigorously honest. And that is, first of all, looking at the fact that you have an addiction. Okay? And secondly, what are you going to do about it? Okay? What are you going to do about it? Not somebody else. Okay? It's great that you have somebody pulling for you. I agree. That's a wonderful thing. No problem there. But you have to take action steps. You have to make the decision that you are sick and tired of being what? Sick and tired. And when you do that, you will step forward to a new life that you never imagined, probably better than you have imagined. Except SEP, SEP. I don't even know how to spell September. SEP, SEPTEMBER. Wow. Where did he come up with the name September? Okay. But you know what? You don't know what you can end up with. I never thought I'd be here sitting on the internet talking about my life, talking about recovery from addictions when I've, you know, 20 years ago, 19 years ago. Now, 20 years, I certainly didn't think about that. I didn't think I had a problem. That was the problem. I didn't think I had a problem. I thought the rest of the world had a problem. And if they quit screwing around with me, then maybe I can get some help. Maybe my life would straighten out. But until then, it was not my fault. Everything was everybody else's fault. Did you ever hear that? And it's funny, you know, because I talk to people, and they talk to me, and they go, you know, isn't it funny how people did that? It's a good thing you and I didn't do that. And I go, well, actually, that's what I did. I did all that stuff. And they're like aghast because, what, I'm reasonably normal. I'm not going to tell you I'm the most normal guy in the world, but I'm not too bad. And again, the fact that I did have this issue and that I did face it and that I'm growing on a daily basis still, growing beyond my issues. And that's what this program, guys, is all about. It's hope, whether it's hopelessness. It is water in a dry desert island. You know, where there's no water, it's like an oasis. You can get help if you want it. One day at a time, one step at a time, reaching out and helping other people. Now, we do the show every Sunday night. Our format's pretty much the same. It's open candor. Some days we have people we know they're going to show up. That was great. Irna was asked. She told me she would be happy to come and, you know, share her personal experience, strength, and hope about what it was like to be the mother and a parent of what? Of somebody that was recovering or from an addiction. And I met her on the phone. She and I just had the occasion to meet. And, you know, again, candid conversation, a little bit here, a little bit there. Pretty soon, what? She's like, hey, can you share that stuff with me on the air? This is wonderful. And to have the courage to come forth and to share this with other people, that's the miracle, folks. Those are the miracles in life. You are the miracle that was created by our God, Heavenly Father, Jesus. And the fact that you are willing to share yourself in an unselfish manner, that is another wonderful miracle gift. And I'm telling you, that woman, that lady, Irna, terrific lady. I'm so happy to know her. Thank you. And I wish her the greatest success in all she's going to do. She wants to do a broadcast about real estate. Now, me, I do real estate every day. I don't want to put it in a show. Not at all. I want to do something that helps me. And do you understand that by me talking about these programs, by this, it gives me the greatest strength and courage to not want to go back out there because I'm faced with the same challenges and dilemmas that most people in recovery are faced with. You know, we face a world that tells us that we would probably be better off if we drank. It tells us that, you know, problems that we're having will go away if we drink. And that's not true. It doesn't work that way. It absolutely doesn't, and I know it doesn't, and I know that I don't want to buy into that because there are times when my mind is weak, when I'm tired, when I'm hungry, when I'm lonely, when I'm angry and I'm tired, the HALT acronym. You know, when that happens, I realize that I've got to do something different. And so what I've decided for myself is to do this broadcast. And the more I talk about recovery, the more I realize that it takes work to get and stay sober. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful to God that God has given me this ability to do this, the opportunity to do this show. And again, at any time, if it's time to go, it's time to go. Okay? I don't care. I'm just, you know, carrying the message my own way. If anybody else wants to join me, they're welcome to it. If somebody benefits from sharing, I'm grateful. I know that I'm getting something out of this show. And again, it's not exclusive to just me. You can do it too. Every Sunday night, you can join me here on the Road to Recovery. My email is Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, at D-A-A-R-E.com. Or my direct phone number, if you want to call me for any reason, is 1-800-I-S-Q. So that's 1-800-427-5968. My office number, area code 630-918-6129. And we, you know, I'm here 7 days a week. I'm just a real person. I'm tangible. You can touch me. You can call me. You're not going to hear me be different, you know, when you call me up, than I am here on the air. That's what I'm trying to say to you. I'm real. I am a real person with real issues, with real facing the same real challenges that maybe you might be facing on a day-to-day basis, and you don't know how to, or maybe you're frightened and afraid to. I'm here to be here for you, with you, to help you get beyond it, because I'm going to tell you, I know what's behind, you know, I know what's on the other side of the mountain, and it's, you know, the mountain of recovery. And what it is just reality that, hey, good, you know, I can have a better life, and you can have a better life, and what do we have to do to get it? You know, stay sober. That's really the only thing that we've got to do. That's the only thing that I need to do perfectly every day, and that is to stay sober. And when I stay sober, God, life is wonderful. Life is good. There is a multitude of things, and I'm grateful that I'm part of them. And I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to share my life with you and with anybody else that wants what I have. If you want what I have and you're willing to go to any lengths, then you're ready to take certain steps. Now, you didn't call in tonight, and that's okay, because we had a guest, Arna. I don't even know if I have her last name. I don't know where you're going to mention her last name. Without her permission, I'm not going to. But you can call Arna, okay? Area code 949-244-0444. And if you have an issue that relates to drug addiction, maybe you have somebody with alcohol problems and you don't know what to do, a loved one that's caught up in an addiction, call Arna. She's a personal experience font of great information, and I'm so grateful that she was able to make time on a day like today. You know, it's a holiday, and most people don't want to do nothing. In fact, you might just be listening to this on a rebroadcast because you were out having a good time, and that's okay. All right, if you listen, that's fine. If you get something out of this, that's fine. If you don't worry, because it helped me out, okay? Gave me another day to get and stay sober, and that I am grateful for. And then I got to listen to, you know, Varna explaining to know that, you know, what other people do to help their kids. I was just amazed. My folks really never helped us from our addictions. A lot of criticism, a lot of constant critiquing of our lives, but that's probably what they knew. They didn't know any better. I don't know. How did our friend Arna get such a vast, I think that was one of the things that fascinated me the most, was where did she learn how to go and to get somebody to do a intervention? See, that stuff, it's good that we have TV that talks about it, okay? And that's the thing. We need to speak more candidly about recovery because recovery is something important that everybody needs in their life. I need it. You need it. You know, maybe you work for somebody that's an alcoholic. I'm certainly going to tell you, I'm probably not the most fun guy to work with all the time, but when I'm fun, I'm fun. And when I'm work, I want to work. And if it's my dime and my dollar, don't waste it, please. Not a good thing. Not a good thing to waste money. So, all right, next week, I don't know if we'll have any guests. I don't know if Ken's going to join us, but next week we will be back on the air with the Road to Recovery. Maybe we'll do another reflection about what took place tonight on the show. Certainly am grateful, again, that Arna came on, and I want to make sure I get her a card or say something to her to thank her for her unselfishness. And that really is the cool part, folks. You know, people in recovery, they know and they value what it takes to give from the heart. And, boy, what better way to give to somebody than your time? You know, the time that you have in your life, there's only so much of it. And we want to make sure that people recognize that, you know, when you do give of that time, it's a great and wonderful thing. So, Arnett, again, thank you so much. And thank you for listening. If you did listen, if you're listening on the rebroadcast or something live, something strikes you, don't hesitate to call. Don't, you know, that's what our number is here for. My number during the week, again, is area code 630-918-6129. We have an 800 number, 1-800-427-5968. and or my email, daniel@daare.com. Call, email, text, whatever you like. I'm here for you the best I can. We hope that you have a great, safe Labor Day weekend. If you're drinking, don't drive. I want to see a zero tolerance for alcohol. And we'll talk a little bit more about it next week. But you have a great week, unless you have other plans. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of the program and the miracle. Have a great night. Good night.